Don't you know that Rome wasn't built in a day? Well, of course it wasn't, because nothing can be built in a day unless it's a Lego set or something.
Even then, I think if you had a Lego set of Rome, it would take more than a day to build it. Like, that sounds like quite a complex Lego set.
I don't know. Rome's not that big, is it? I've been talking about ancient Rome. Just stick a couple of columns on a hill. Done.
Rome.
Yeah. And a wee bit for the river, which has its own god, the Tiberius. I always thought Tiberius was just an emperor, but apparently the son of some guy that Venus banged.
Was the emperor called after the river god, or was the river god called after the emperor, or are they the same person?
No, I would think that the river god came first and then the emperor.
That makes logical sense, but you never know.
Because, as we know, and hi folks, welcome to Crystal Myth. Hello. I know I said the last time when I uploaded my little episode that we would have one last week uploaded. Yeah, I apologise, because that didn't quite happen. I swear, I did try and record another one. Like, I did record the rest of the alphabetical gods and goddesses of Egypt, or date in Egypt, what the fuck, deities of Rome. I'm losing the plot. Deities of Rome, but it didn't record. No, it did record, but when I tried to upload it or edit it or whatever, it said there was a problem with sound, so I just deleted it in a rage. So that's why you don't have that episode, and this is why we're doing this now. Anyway, why do I need to explain this shit? I apologize anyway, but like, whatever. God's sake. Okay, right. Well, Mark, we are talking about ancient Roman mythology. And as I was saying before I hit record here, I don't know. I just didn't find it all that interesting. I'm like slacking off our own topic here. I was excited when you said, oh, we're doing Roman mythology. And then I just like read into it and I was like, well, there's not really much to it apart from like them stealing other people's gods and goddesses and claiming it as their own, just changing it a little bit.
Some things that I thought were interesting.
Oh, there's Vesta, who is the goddess of
the front of houses.
How is she? The hearth?
No, fire. It's just being daft, because is your Vesta not like
Vesta matches?
Yeah, like getting a fancy front of your house installed.
Yeah, but this is another thing that I was thinking about with Romans, is that they've infiltrated our lives in so many ways. Like, so many things are named after Roman times, like ancient Roman mythology. Like, carrying someone over the threshold is a Roman thing.
No, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, it's a Roman tradition of preventing demons ruining your marriage somehow by getting into the house. I don't know.
Or just, yeah, you know,
demonizing your wife,
your partner for being a hot demon.
Yeah. And the other one is the wedding band, which came from the love knot or the Herculean knot. Again, they stole like that from the Greeks, the legend of Hercules, and claimed it as their own. But they said that when Romans got married, they would tie the knot, which I always thought was a Scottish thing, but no, it's a Herculean knot of love from ancient Roman times, and they would tie this round the bride's waist. It's a certain kind of knot that only the groom could undo on their wedding night.
I do get why you thought that was Scottish and I didn't know where it actually come from, but I've always been very confused. You know, I would say prior to the past 8 years, had not been to a wedding where the very Scottish officiant was like, and this is the oldest Scottish tradition of weddings. Whereas the last like 8 years, any wedding I've been to seems to have that. And they say that and I'm like, no, it's not. Like, as a theology, that's not true.
I think they're getting confused. They're confusing it with handfast, which is when I think Scottish weddings, or if they were wedding in secret, they did a handfast. So that was like them, like the couple saying, right, we're going to get married, even if our parents don't approve, we're going to do the handfast thing where they cross over, I don't know, some sort of fabric on their hands and they tie a knot. And then that's what is it?
Betrothed.
What is it? Betrothed, yeah. So then they'll actually get married later or something like that. I don't know. Maybe I'm
and
just.
And then when you actually get married, you jump sideways over a broom or a branch.
What? No, that's slavery, isn't it?
No, that's like old.
No, no, that did they not do that? They jumped over the broom or the branch. I'm getting this from this program called Roots, because I'm sure that's what they did. They made up their own tradition.
Yeah.
And like I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. It's a bit silly.
Maybe everyone's right.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, wedding traditions are quite silly, so.
The whole wedding thing is silly, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You don't need to get married. Why do you need to put on a performance just to end up divorced and spending loads of money on someone you don't like anymore? I'm
not
so
even
cynical.
In that sense, it's just weird. Like, if you want to be in a monogamous relationship, cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why you need, not that eventually you'll get divorced and that'll cost lots of money. Just like, if you want to be in a monogamous relationship, surely you can just be like,
well,
we are in a monogamous relationship.
I know, like, this isn't really anything to do with Roman mythology.
It's
but
not.
Have you been drawn into the whole Kate and Will's rabbit hole thing? Like, where is Kate Middleton? Because she wouldn't divorce. Apparently, she's left them, and that's why they're faking pictures of her and stuff. And, like, supposedly she had this abdominal surgery, but the conspiracy is that she had an affair with the cousin of William or something like that by marriage, and he died. William got pregnant by him, so he forced her to get an abortion, and it went wrong. They put her in a coma, and he was raging and killed the guy. He died recently of serious head wounds, but they're not saying how he came by the serious head wounds, which I find very suspect. Like, why did he have serious head wounds? Like, what? Did he fall or was he pushed?
I mean,
like, and at the same time that happens, William said that he couldn't attend his godfather's memorial, the King Constantine of Greece, because for personal reasons, or was it because he'd done a murder and then had his wife forcibly put in a coma because she got pregnant? These are all things we need to think about.
No is my answer.
I just love all.
No, I just think she needed abdominal surgery.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see, Mark. We'll see. Also, that
he's definitely been banging
the Countess of Chomlomsey or whatever her name is, Rose Hanbury. She's married to a guy 20 years older than her who's in his 60s who likes to go to France and bang guys while she's banging William or pegging him because that's what he likes, apparently. He likes to be pegged. And so the whole marriage thing is absurd. So go back to that. Because, like, in our royal family, marriage is just bullshit, isn't it? They just, what I was going to say is, my point was, probably back in Roman times, marriage was for political reasons or alliances. You married, I don't know, like the common people married for love or whatever, or just so that they could have, or is that something that comes from Roman times?
That's what I'm wondering. Did common people even get married? Like, maybe it was just for political purposes.
I don't know.
Kings
and queens would want to get married because then that's a political alliance, and then they need to have heirs, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could have heirs without being married, but then I don't fucking know. It doesn't matter whether you're legit or not.
But then it's only if you're married that legitimizes the heirs, but again, that wouldn't matter if you were a common person. So.
But there were lots of gods in Roman mythology that were gods and goddesses of marriage and little like things like that, but there was like a god for every little thing in Roman mythology, and each local principality or like local region had their own local god as well. Like there's the god of truth and honesty. There's a lot of when I mentioned last time, there was a lot of gods and goddesses that were just to help women give birth, which probably tells you a lot, because maybe it was just highly dangerous then, and that
most ancient religions have like multiple goddesses of like
Watch
sorry, while you were talking about that, because I was like, that's one of the most interesting questions that I feel was ever randomly cropped up when we're talking. I never thought of that before. So it wasn't really until the 12th century that people actually started to get, like, that common people started to get married, apparently.
Oh,
according to
really?
Ian Visits, whoever he is.
Ian Mansfield. Visits? Sounds like you mean
according to Ian Mansfield's
Mansfield, okay.
Political blog. Don't know who he is, but...
Right, so where, though? Around the world or in general? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, so...
Because like, priests used to... Catholic
all over the world,
used to be able to marry.
It wasn't until the 12th century that people started to have regulated marriages, and it was, in fact, not until the 15th century that there were formal rules about how to get married and what marriage was. Prior to this, marriage did exist. However, it existed in places such as, which loops us round because it is what we're talking about, them having formal structures in ancient Roman society where they did have several forms of marriage, but all of these forms of marriage were specifically related to a woman's financial situation.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, basically marriage was political. Oh, he's a political commentator. I was like, why is somebody who's expert in politics talking about this? So marriage was political everywhere in the world until about the 12th century. And it wasn't really something that poor people did until the 15th century.
Yeah, because
that makes sense.
Yeah, but it does make sense, because what the fuck have poor people got to gain by getting married? They both can't bring money to each other. Like, it's not like they can get a dowry. See, rich people, it was like a cattle market. See, if you go back to like the 18th to the 19th century, women had no rights. They had no means of, unless you were lucky and you inherited a lot of shit, lands and stuff, and you had that power over man, then you would need a rich husband to look after you, and you'd have to settle for some fuck like Mr. Collins in Pride and Prejudice, who's a total idiot. But if you encourage him to go out in his garden enough, then you can keep away from him and just live in comfort and security.
Whereas if you were the rich woman,
there's no love involved.
Wanted to get married instead of live together, because then you could protect your own assets.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which is weird, not weird, but the way we think about marriage now, it's like, that's interesting that...
Mm.
You only needed to get married to ensure that people couldn't get half your money.
Yeah, but now women are more independent and they both work. So the man and the woman both work. Technically, like me, my partner, like boyfriend David, like we both have our own incomes. We spend our own money separately. We don't have a joint account, although we do have a joint mortgage, because that's the only way you can do it unless you're rich. You know what I mean? Like, we choose to live together, but we don't choose to cement that in a marriage. And people find that strange. Like, the only way that a marriage would be beneficial is for legal purposes, maybe. Like, so that you get more...
Again, is apparently what it was created for.
But then they say,
it wasn't until the 15th century that the church began to... The Christian churches began to lay down formal rules about how... what marriage was, how it must be consummated, when a couple would be allowed to marry, how a mutual declaration would work, the fact that it had to take place in front of witnesses.
Right, yeah.
However, at this point in time, they didn't say you needed a priest or to have it take place in a church. It wasn't until 1563, so there was a change between the mid-15th century and 1563, that... Hold on, the article just jumped. I hate when articles do that. 1563 that again the churches decided that, so there was the Council of Trent waiting for a declaration that were a necessity for a man and a woman and should be carried out in front of a priest, and then most other churches, including the Roman Catholic Church, took this on board, and this eventually spread to all other religions and became a worldly thing where it was expected in most countries that you at some point should settle down with somebody of the opposite gender and have a legally binding religious ceremony.
I find it really hypocritical that Catholic priests have to like guide couples on marriage and sexual relationships and stuff when they don't, well, I mean, they say they don't bang, but they bang kids, obviously, but like, still, that's wrong. But they don't, they're not supposed to be married themselves or and be celibate, allegedly, because half of them aren't celibate, I don't think.
No, but you are right. The idea that somebody that doesn't have sex should give, yeah, would be the best person to give sexual guidance, or someone who would be in a monogamous relationship would be the best person to give guidance on monogamous relationships is a bit bizarre.
It's very bizarre. But I do like that. I mean, it was just a way of controlling him, I think, because again, back to, I don't know, Roman priests were allowed to be married. It wasn't till a certain point in time that someone decided, nah, you're not allowed wives anymore and you're not allowed to bang. So it's really stupid. Because it makes sense, like, everyone's sexual beings, and I don't see why not. I mean, I genuinely think that Jesus as a person had consorts and had sex with men or women. I don't know. Probably did. Like, you want the full experience if you're going to be coming down to Earth as a human. I think aliens would want that. Why are we talking about this? This is supposed to be about Roman mythology and we're talking about aliens and Jesus.
I can make it like, wait, you talked about Jesus. Okay. Do you want to hear one of the Roman myths that I've read about?
Okay.
Have you heard the myth of the Caladrius?
No.
So, the Caladrius was apparently, according to ancient Roman myth, an all-white bird that looked a bit like a really wee albino heron. Like, if you imagine a tiny heron, like, about, if its body was about the size of a guinea pig.
But it still looked like a heron.
But it just looked like a tiny, like, albino heron.
I love it. Yeah.
So the Caladrius was special because it apparently had the ability to draw out sickness into itself and then carry your sickness away. Like, so if you caught a Caladrius and someone was unwell, and you put it on the chest of the very ill person,
sounds crazy, but okay.
It might heal them. So the myth is that if they're like, if they're basically at the point where they're about to pass into the underworld for Rome, yeah, they were still underworld. Yeah,
ruled by Pluto, Mickey's dog.
Mickey's dog.
Right, yeah.
So if the person is about to leave for the underworld, then there's no way for the Caladrius to save them. So it will stand up and turn away from their face and sit back down. But if they're still savable, the Caladrius will stare at them until they open their eyes. It will then stare directly into their eyes, and the whatever the sickness is will transfer from the ill person into the Caladrius. So let's say that they had cancer, right? They've no longer got cancer, but the Caladrius does. But what it does is it flies out the window and directly into the sun.
Like a phoenix?
Like a phoenix, because it burns up the illness, but it doesn't burn the bird. So the bird catches fire, the illness burns out of the bird, and then the bird's no longer burning, and then it flies back out the sun and returns to Earth.
Okay, but what the fuck has that got to do with Jesus?
Because this is believed to be why Jesus is represented by a white bird that's often called the white dove.
Not because the dove of peace?
Yeah, not because of the dove of peace, not because of anything to do with the story of Noah's Ark, but because, obviously, much like you're saying, ancient Rome stole from everyone round about them, as we know, early Christianity stole from everyone round about them.
Yeah.
So the people that were part of the like Roman Empire that were really into the idea of the Caladrius, people would be like, and do you know who the true healing bird of faith was? Our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ!
Yeah, because I was reading about this transubstantiation ritual where they genuinely believe that by drinking the blood and by drinking wine and eating bread, as we all know, you're literally eating and drinking the body and blood of Christ, right? And I'm like, that sounds quite pagan to me.
Yes.
And not just because I was brought up in a Protestant household, it really does sound mental. So I was like, wonder if that's sort of like Roman thing that they changed, like transitioned into a Christian ritual, and turns out it is, because back in ancient Rome there was lots of Etruscan, I think that's what it's called, and as we spoke before, they had a Mithran cult, and we like spoke Mithras about Mithra one. Mithras, yeah, and that came from Etruscan, and Etruscan is, I'm like, what the fuck is Etruscan anyway? And it's just, turns out it's just Rome. It's just Italy outside of the city of Rome before Rome became massive. So they're just Italians that had their own little cults before the Romans essentially just took over everything and the globe. And they had little mysteries, they called it, where they would... That might be like the place in Pompeii, which is like really well preserved, called the House of the Mysteries. It could be related to that because they don't actually know what was going on in there. They think it was some sort of women's club, like for lesbians, but they were worshipping Mithras or doing something. They don't know, but it is awesome. And they had rituals where they would symbolically eat Mithras or eat representations of their gods. Same thing. Through like red and white. Makes
sense because it links in with their faith instead of
the
idea. And even it's like the we've talked about Eostra and the Easter egg and all that. Yeah, there's so much stuff that's like make like the Christian what I'm trying to say here. I feel like when other faiths steal things from other religions, they translate it really well. Whereas I think the thing that I really like about Christianity is they do just lift it and lay it and don't bother to make it make any sense.
They don't. And Saturnalia, I read about it was basically the party time for Romans and to drink, and it said to switch genders.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, switch genders. And then I thought, what else? Maybe this is a tenuous like mark, but I'm thinking, what other tradition in like Christmas time, which would have been Saturnalia, where you switch genders? Think about it. Entertainment wise, at Christmas.
Oh, pantomimes.
Yeah, because the woman plays the prince and the man plays the woman, so it's like, well, that's a very Roman Saturnalian thing that happens to take place in December to January. January is also named after one of the only sort of Roman gods that were original, like wasn't made up from Greek or Etruscan gods, called Janus. Oh, I don't know. I don't want to upset anyone who worships.
Upset anyone called Janus.
But that's where the word January comes from, after Janus, because, and it makes sense, because January comes after, like, that's a new year, but you're also close to the last year. So Janus, because Janus is someone I work with.
I was thinking Janus from The Muppets.
Or Bad Janus from, like, The Good Place. So, oh no, she's Janet, that's not Janus. God, there's not really a lot of people called Janus these days. Janice in Rocky Horror Picture Show? Or is it Janet?
Janet. Damn it. Janet.
Janet. Oh, okay. Right. Well, what was I saying? What the fuck was I talking about there? January Janus, right. Because Janus is the god who has two heads, right? Not Edmund Mordrake, if you've heard of him. That was a man who had his brother's head on the back of his skull that could talk and stuff. But anyway, Janus is a man with two heads. One looks into the future and one looks into the past. So that's why they named January after him, because again, you're looking to the future because it's the start of the year, but you're also looking at the past because you've just passed the last year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And also the Romans would shut their gates in time of war, and they would open their gates in time of peace. So it also represents that as well, like the two faces of Janus. I quite like that idea. But I don't know whether, I mean, that's the only modern link to him is January, I suppose, and where it's positions. But I mean, that's still quite a big thing. Tuesday's named after Mars, apparently. I don't get that. Because aren't like days, some days of the week are named after Norse gods, but some, I don't know if there's any Roman versions like of the days of the week, but the months tend to be Roman, because July is named after the Julii or Julius Caesar.
August is named after Augustus Caesar.
Exactly. October, Octavius. So again, we're still retaining quite a lot of the ancient mythology that still to this day is very prevalent in our culture. And lots of people's cultures across the world, not just here. Because obviously, like, I suppose it's a bit like when the British had their empire and they imposed a lot of their laws and systems in India and Jamaica, loads of other like colonial cities that like basically Britain took over, and they've kept a lot of things from that time.
Yeah.
One of which is like a lot of like laws against gays, which we now oppose, but that was just what it was back then. So it's, I guess because like the Romans overtook most of the world, that's why they stole a lot of the cultures, or like they took a lot of the local gods and merged it with their own.
Which again makes sense with like the whole sort of British Empire going to other countries, yeah, and then being like, you should be Christian, and people being like, no, mm-hmm, we worship this goddess in this, yeah, small village, and they're like, yes, and she was a nun, and her name was Sister Frances Louise.
You brought up Bridget, and she was originally, yes, a pagan goddess, and then they changed, the Catholics or whatever, changed her to a saint. In fact, a lot of Roman gods became Catholic saints, really.
Well, then I like her, as we said before, because the,
yeah,
she was a pagan goddess that the, well, actually, she was probably a real woman who was then turned into a pagan goddess, who was then turned into a Catholic saint,
yeah,
who was mad, then turned into a voodoo loa.
But they do, and also, like, when I was reading about the different hierarchies of the Roman gods, it's very much like the Christian hierarchies of the angels and the cherubi and all that, because you've got your main gods, who would be like, I guess, Jehovah and Jesus and Mary or whatever, and then you've got like your angels, and like that would be like your nymphs and your household gods and things like that. So it's the same sort of thing, except maybe like in the Roman gods, nobody went to heaven. Like in Roman mythology, nobody went to heaven. Everyone went to the underworld, because that's, yeah, where the dead lived, which I quite like. I mean, but obviously they got turned into demons by Constantine, who Christianized the Roman Empire and decided that, you know, we're no longer going to go for pagan ways. So I think it didn't quite, there was a guy that tried to bring it back, but it didn't quite work. But that's how you eradicate a culture, I suppose, is just if you've got power, then you forcibly change everyone.
Yeah, just like,
yeah, to stop their ways,
it into your culture, but in a very negative way.
But the only way that they can ease them in, maybe, like you said, like, is to change their festivals into Christian festivals, so that it's easing them into it. Because a lot of pagan traditions still like sort of morphed into the Christianity, yeah, tradition. So it's just, yeah. Anyway, have you read anything about, like, I mean, what's the obvious stories you know about Roman mythology, like that you've heard of?
Well, one of them that I looked at that, well, I didn't even deliberately look at, because I was like, it's so obvious, it's boring, and then realised that it wasn't as obvious as I thought it was. I looked at Pegasus.
But that's Greek.
Is it?
Yes. See?
Okay.
The Romans steal things.
Well, in that case, which makes sense, because I was like, I didn't think this was the story of Pegasus, but it did say the Roman Pegasus. So right, the Romans must have stolen Pegasus, but then they have like 57 of them.
Exactly, that's what I found when I was reading about all the different gods and goddesses. I said, for fuck's sake, they've got hundreds of these things, and they've got like 20 different versions of the one god. I guess it depends what area you live in.
I think that might be, well, that I'm saying, I think that might be it is, because they have like the, I mean, I didn't write down all 50 odd of them, but they have like the Pegasus of Phoncine, the Pegasus of Segamo, the Pegasus of Cusques. Don't know what that noise was. The Pegasus of Relinas, the Pegasus of Nancre, the Pegasus.
What does that even mean?
So it's what you said. So basically, they must have stolen the idea of Pegasus from the ancient Greeks.
Yeah.
But then all of the different like wee places in Rome all had their own Pegasus, yeah, but they're all like really, I mean, they're, yeah, all magic horses, but they're all really different.
Yeah, exactly. What I was gonna say, like, is that they have, oh, like I said in my last podcast, like my little solo one, they've got all these different types of gods. So they've got Mater and Pater, which is, Mater's obviously mother, and then they've got Pater, Mother Earth, which is like Gaia, Vesta, goddess of chastity. And then they've also got like a male and female version of the same god, like of, like the counterparts to each other as well.
I'd noticed, like, the only thing that I kind of read, it was like blah 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 blah, and then his sister the exact same thing, and then like so and so, and then his sister the exact same thing, and it was like, oh, okay, so that adds up, like. Although I was slightly confused, but that makes sense if that's just the thing that they do for every single divine creature.
So there's triads. Like, they group them into different sections. There's the Deconsentes, which is the 12 main deities whose gilded images stood in the forum. Most of them are taken from the Greek gods, so there's 12 of them. I wonder if that's anything to do with the 12 disciples of Jesus. Again, another sort of link to the 12 deities of ancient Rome. They were also placed in 6 male-female pairs as well, so they always have like a male and female counterpart. And they're called major flamens, which makes me laugh, or minor flamens. So there's like the three Roman the flaminales, the three Roman deities cultivated by major flamens are Jupiter, Mars, and Quirinus. The 12 Roman deities attended by the minor flamens. There's so many of them, by the way. I mean, I read them all out before. There's the Deselecti, which is a list of 20 principal gods of Roman religion. And then there's the Saban gods, so who were of Saban origin. And like, who are the Sabans? The Sabans were a tribe of people who lived before Rome was a thing. And I don't know if you've ever seen Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Mark.
No, I don't think I have.
Well, there's a horrific song where they sing, like, they talk about, let's go and kidnap the women in the village, because it happened, because, well, the oldest brother says that's fine because the Romans did it to the Sabin women. And he goes, and women were sobbing, sobbing, sobbing. And all this about basically singing about kidnapping and raping women, to be honest with you.
I feel like if your justification of something being morally acceptable involves you describing people sobbing, then it might not actually be morally acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, these women have Stockholm syndrome, so they eventually, you know, like it. So the thing, what happens is, the story of the sobbing women, the Sabine women, as they were called, Romulus was the founder. Well, one of the myths about the founding of Rome, there's two of them. One of them is Romulus and Remus, which I'm sure you've heard of, who were thrown out of the king's palace by a traitor who wanted to overthrow their father or their grandfather. I don't know which one it is. And they were raised by a she-wolf. And there's a famous statue of Romulus and Remus, they're twins, suckling from the teat of the she-wolf who raised them. And then they decided to found their own city, but they argued over which hill. Like, there's 7 hills of Rome, and they argued about where they should build like the main part of it, or have the capital of the city. So eventually Romulus got sick of it and just killed Remus. He just murdered him. And then he
somewhat approve of thinking, I'm so bored having this conversation that I'm going to stand
murder you. Yeah, fuck it, I win. So he decided that there wasn't enough like women in Rome. They needed to populate the Roman city with some hot girls. So what he did was, he went to the Sabin tribe, and just basically his army, his men, they just kidnapped a whole load of women and took them back to Rome. And I think there was going to be like a war, so like the Sabin men were like, we'll fucking get our women back. And then Remus, or what was his name, Romulus, is like, no, I'm gonna fuck yous up. So rather than have bloodshed, the women were just like, it's fine, we'll just stay here, we won't protest, just keep us here. So in exchange, they basically gave, that's where they got a lot of their gods from, like from the Sabin culture. So they had sort of some sort of cultural exchange. And a lot of them are like Fortuna, Minerva, Vulcan, Quirinus. I'm really interested in who Quirinus is. I'm going to go look.
Me too, now that you've mentioned them, because I was just about to say all the heavy hitters then, and then you said someone I've never heard of.
This is something for the hipsters out there. So his symbols are a beard and religious and military clothing. That's his thing. He has male, and his consort is Hercelia Hora. And he's an early god of the Roman state in Augustan Rome. He was also an epithet of Janus, which is who I mentioned earlier. Yeah. The name is recorded across Roman sources as Quirinus, Corinus, Quirinus. He's got various versions of, but it all begins with Q. The name is also attested as a surname to Hercules, as Hercules Quirinus. It's so confusing, Roman mythology, it really is. It probably stems from the Latin Quiris, the name of the Roman citizens in their peacetime function, since both Quiris and Quirinus are connected with Sabellic, like the Sabin, immigrants. They were forced there into Roman ancient legends. It may be a loan word meaning wielder of the spear, Sabin Quiris, spear of Janus Quirinus, or a derivation from the Sabin town of Cures. Okay, but what does he actually do? Like, he was portrayed as a bearded man, so hipster, with religious and military clothing, again, hipster. However, he was almost never depicted in later Roman art. His main festival was held on February the 17th. What's held on February the 17th? Again, I think that also comes from Roman mythology, is the Bacchanalia festival, which is where you party as much as you can, and then like it's basically turned into Mardi Gras.
Oh,
takes place in February, doesn't it? Like,
it does.
Saying that, he was most originally, again, a Sabin war god. The Sabins had a settlement near the eventual site of Rome and erected an altar to Quirinus. And Quirino held one of the seven hills of Rome. When the Romans settled in the area, the cult of Quirinus became part of their early belief system. This occurred before the later influence from classical Greek culture. Again, they're just stealing from different places and, you know, they're a bit like the Borg. I don't know if they're like the Borg, but, you know, they just want to assimilate everyone into their city and their way of life. By the end of the first century, Quirinus could be considered the deified legendary first king Romulus. So he is also Romulus. Okay. In his life of Romulus, Plutarch wrote that shortly after Rome's founder had disappeared under what some considered suspicious circumstances, a Roman noble named Proculus Julius reported that Romulus had come to him while he was travelling. He claimed that Romulus had instructed him to tell his countrymen that he, Romulus, was Quirinus. Right. They were probably originally the same divine entity, which was split into a founder hero and a god when Roman religion became demythicized. To support this, he points to the association of both Romulus and Quirinus with the grain spelt. I don't really understand any of this now. The last day of the festival is called Quirinalia and corresponds with the traditional day of Romulus's death. On that day, the Romans would toast spelt as an offering to the goddess Fornax. Who the fuck is Fornax? See, again, like, this is weird. In one version of the legend of Romulus's death, cited by Plutarch, he was killed and cut into pieces by the nobles, and each of them took a part of his body home and buried it on their land.
Lovely.
Yes. Berich claimed this pattern, a festival involving a staple crop, a god, and a tale of a slain founding hero whose body parts are buried in the soil, is a recognised mytheme that arises when such a split takes place in culture's mythology. The possible presence of the Flamen Quirinus at the festival of Acca Laurentia would corroborate this thesis, given the fact that Romulus is a stepson of hers and one of the original 12 Arval brethren. It's so confusing. Like, there's so many different...
I'm mostly laughing because Arvo Brethren sounds like a...
Brethren. It does. His early importance led to Quirinus' inclusions in the Archaic Triad, along with Mars, who was then an agriculture god and not a war god, in Jupiter. Oh. Over time, however, Carinus became less significant and he was absent from later, more widely known triad. He and Mars had been replaced by Juno and Minerva. Juno being the equivalent of like Hera and Minerva being the equivalent of Athena when the Greek culture took over. Varro mentions that the Capitolium Vetus, an earlier cult site on the Carinal devoted to Jupiter, Juno and Minerva, among whom Martial makes a distinction between old Jupiter and the new. Eventually, Romans began to favour personal and mystical cults over the official state belief system. These included those of Bacchus, Sibyl and Isis from Egypt, obviously, and Greek, leaving only Carinus Flamen to worship him. What is Flamen then? What is it, just people, like followers? I really don't know. Even centuries after the fall of the Roman Empire, the Quirinal Hill in Rome, originally named from the deified Romulus, was still associated with power. It was chosen as the seat of the royal house after the taking of Rome by Savoia, and later it became the residence of the presidents of the Italian Republic. So he's like one of the original big gods.
Yeah.
That eventually faded over time, but he's still there, kind of.
It's also interesting that we're saying like, oh, Christianity and Roman mythology are so similar because they like nick from everybody else, but
yeah,
really they kind of just are the same thing.
Oh, Flamen is a high priest of the god Quirinus. So are Flamens like priests then, I guess? Doesn't really okay. tell you. Flamen. I'll just say Flamen. Anyway, that's just one of the many different confusing gods that they have, but their main 12 gods were basically copies of the Greek gods, which is Zeus, who then became Jupiter, who was the king of the gods, sky, thunder and justice. Hera became Juno in Roman mythology, who's the queen of gods. She liked to fuck with people a lot. One of the stories about the founders of Rome is that he came from Troy, and basically the Trojan horse didn't exist in the Greek story of it. It was the Romans that came up with that, apparently. Oh. And then there's a whole story of this guy from Troy going from Troy to Africa, and he met Queen Dido, and he completely forgot that his purpose was to go and found his own city and find Rome. And according to the story, it was Juno's that did this to him, like, caused him to forget everything and fall in love with Queen Dido, until eventually Mercury said to him, "Hoy, bro, stop letting this woman distract you. Stop being distracted by tits and puss, and go and found Rome." And he was like, "Oh, fuck, you're right. I better go." And he just left her. And then she was devastated. So she killed herself on a funeral pyre, apparently, and just threw herself into a fire, but didn't survive like the mother of dragons. And then he fucked off back to Italy and founded Rome. And the gods eventually persuaded Hera to, you know, please stop fucking with this guy because we want him to succeed. And she's like, all right then. And apparently went to the underworld as well and met and came across Queen Dido there for some reason. She's like, oh, bastards, look where I am because of you. Well, you didn't need to kill yourself, did you? Anyway, Poseidon, of Greek origin, became Neptune, god of the sea, earthquakes and horses. Demeter, in Greek mythology, became Ceres, goddess of agriculture, fertility and harvest. Athena, as I said earlier, became Minerva, goddess of wisdom, warfare and crafts. Apollo was just Apollo. They didn't change his name. I don't know why. He was just the god of the sun. Yeah. Music, healing, prophecy. Artemis became Diana, goddess of the hunt, wilderness and childbirth. But there's loads of childbirth, like minor goddesses and gods. Ares became Mars, the god of war, representing brutal and violent aspects of battle. Aphrodite, of course, became Venus. Hephaestus became Vulcan, god of fire, metalworking and craftsmanship. And then Hermes became Mercury, because Mercury's famous for like the winged heels as well. God of trade, thieves, travellers, and a guide to the underworld. And then we've got Hestia, who is the only one out of all of them who is not a Greek of Greek origin. She's just a purely a Roman goddess, which is Vesta. She's goddess of the hearth, home and family. And then they had the famous Vestal Virgins, where they weren't allowed to not be virgins, and if they were like not a virgin anymore, they would get walled up, like buried alive essentially, as lovely punishment. So we talked about that before. Yeah. And there's also Roman gods that are lesser known, like Abundantia, goddess of abundance, that speaks for itself, Laverna, goddess of thieves and liars, and Sol Invictus, the Dies Natalis Solis Invicti festival. Sol Invictus just means the sun. That's all that is, or son of the sun. Trivia, not goddess of quizzes, as I thought, goddess of the crossroads. But then why do they call, like, quiz trivia? Like, you know,
because
the, is that a Roman?
You have to answer a question to cross the crossroads if the whatever it is that's at it is there.
Maybe that, yeah, I suppose. If you so maybe, say that.
Maybe initially they'd pull a card from Trivia's box and she just literally sent boxes out to all the crossroad demons and they'd be like, in 1962, which British soap made its debut on Channel 4? Which makes no sense because it didn't exist in 1962. That's a particularly tricksy demon.
Exactly. As the Roman Empire expanded, the gods of conquered peoples were frequently assimilated, like the Borg, into the Roman pantheon. Resistance is futilely set, given new interpretations that were identified with Roman deities sharing similar functions and attributes. The practice facilitated the cultural integration and administrative cohesion of the empire's diverse provinces.
Indeed.
So they absorbed deities from Etruscan, Greek and Eastern cultures into its pantheon. Process underscores the difference between paganism and monotheism. Paganism, okay, yeah, we know, multiple gods and blah, blah, blah. It's just so mad. Like, honestly, the Roman approach to religion was notably pragmatic. It allowed for the incorporation of gods from conquered peoples or influential neighbours. The adaptability meant different regions within the empire might have varying stories about the same gods, reflecting local traditions and interpretations. Military victories were often seen as evidence of a god's power, leading to their veneration, while their defeat could result in gods being abandoned or their worship modified. All right, so if your god doesn't guarantee you victory, you're just like, well, fuck you, I'll move on to someone else then, you're obviously useless.
I mean, that seems logical,
I suppose, but I just find that interesting that they don't see like a loss as the god punishing them. They see it as the god failing them, which is strange. The Etruscans profoundly influenced Roman culture and religion, contributing not just to deities but also practices like wearing togas, gladiatorial games, and the tradition of the Roman triumph. The Etruscan gods Uni, not university, well, maybe that's what they get, and Menvra evolved into the Roman Juno and Minerva, respectively. The concept of depicting gods as physical statues, a practice introduced by the Etruscans, allowed the Romans to engage with their deities through specific stories and adventures, deepening the religious experience. They also inherited the Etruscan practice of consulting the gods before making significant decisions, reflecting the profound Etruscan concern with the divining the will of the deities. Even after the Etruscans were conquered, Romans still maintained an Etruscan priesthood, especially for consultations during conflicts with barbarian enemies. But then Greek culture and religion impacted Rome, blah, blah, as we know.
Indeed.
Yeah. And then there's the Eastern influence in Roman mythology, which I don't really think about, but the Roman Empire expanded eastward and the imperial cult grew. Eastern religions. Now, what did he mean by Eastern religions exactly? Because what does that entail? Does that entail Christianity because they were in the East, the Middle East? Or Is it
how far east are we going? And well, if you keep going east, you just eventually end up back where you started. So.
Well, I mean, the Romans did end up in Israel, Jerusalem, didn't they? Because that's where they killed Jesus. Unless it was Jesus on the cross and he did the old switcheroo because he was a magician, you know. Might not have been him.
Maybe not.
So So, like, we're talking Buddhism, Hindu. I don't think they went to India, did they? I don't think the Romans went that far east. I'm not sure. Don't think so. That's where Indians didn't, I mean, sorry, the Romans didn't have an impact on anyone. Although, actually, that's not quite true, because see, in Pompeii, they did find a little statue of Lakshmi, an Indian goddess. So someone must have arrived there from India at some point and said, here, have this goddess to play with. I don't know if they actually like thought, oh, we'll start worshipping this goddess, or we'll just, it was just an interesting statue. Like, I've got statues of gods, but don't, you know, like in my shelf. It's like if I put up a crucifix of Jesus, it's not because I worship him, it's because I quite like it as an object, you know, object of art, sort of thing. Or do you think that's blasphemous, Mark? No, you don't.
No, I mean, I definitely don't. My house is covered in random figurines of gods. I was just thinking that, yeah, you might actually be right. Like, maybe it was just somebody visited somebody else and being like, well, quite like the look of Lakshmi, I'll take her home with me.
So the Eastern religions began to influence Roman beliefs. From Augustus onwards, emperors increasingly imported Eastern-focused religious practices, which particularly was the veneration of emperors and empresses as divine figures after their deaths. These figures were termed divi, distinguished from the dea, the dei, or Olympian gods, and were subjects of veneration and gratitude rather than traditional worship. The influence of Eastern cults, such as those dedicated to Mithras and Sol Invictus, further enriched the Roman religious tapestry, introducing new deities and rituals emphasizing the emperor's divine status and the sun god's paramount importance. So I don't agree with that. I think they should go back to the Republic, where the Roman gods didn't really give a shit about like the people. They were just there, I don't know, to be consulted or whatever. It's not like, because like I like the idea of that they were praying to these gods, but the gods are like, well, I don't have to help you if I don't want to. Do you know what I mean? It's not like they're obeying the one god and they had to fear them and stuff. I don't think that's how it worked. Like, the gods didn't genuinely love their people. They just treated them like, I guess, like the Greeks did, like chess pieces to play with. Symbolism in Roman life. So we've got the Aquila, which again, like, comes back into modern times. So you think about the American eagle. Well, sorry, I should have said the Aquila is an eagle, like the Roman imperial eagle. Germany adopted the eagle, I guess, in the Nazi times, or maybe before then, as their symbol. A lot of governments have an eagle as their symbol or on their flag.
Yeah, but pre, one of the areas that Germany used to be before it was Germany, their symbol was the eagle, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, in Prague, I think, has the eagle. It's a prime example symbolising the might and unity of the Roman legions. It was a powerful emblem, more than a military standard. It was a sacred object believed to hold legions' honour, morale and spirit. Losing the Aquila was considered a grave misfortune, while its recovery was celebrated as a significant victory. So a lot of these soldiers, Roman soldiers, would have they would carry the symbol of the eagle. And if they lost it in battle, a lot of them would spend years trying to recover it, because it would be like, obviously, like they said, if they got it back, then it was a great significance to them. Like, losing it was a serious bad omen, which is crazy to me. But anyway, that's what they did. And they placed great emphasis on omens and superstitions. They interpreted natural phenomena as messages from the gods. Right, I like owls, but if you see an owl in Roman times, it was considered an omen of bad luck. I think if I saw an owl, I would be like delighted, but there again, I'm not a Roman. Because an owl was often associated with impending death or misfortune. But if you encountered a bee, that was seen as a sign of good luck, as they
which
were seen
is good, because you do encounter bees far often than you encounter owls.
That's true, actually. We must protect them. I do like seeing bumblebees and like bees enjoying the flowers in my garden. Like, that makes me happy. Not wasps, so they can fuck right off, the wee bastards.
Agreed.
But they were seen as messengers of the gods, bees. That's cute, isn't it?
Yeah.
The belief system extended to everyday actions and events, with Romans constantly seeking signs of favour or displeasure from the divine. Such interpretations influenced decisions ranging from personal matters to state policies, and it reflected the pervasive belief in the gods' active involvement in human affairs. They had rituals and public holidays, which were fundamental to their religious life. They served to honour the gods, ensured their, I was going to say flavour there, but that's a flavour type, favour, and strengthened community bonds. As we have spoke about before, one of them was Saturnalia, which was a week-long celebration. Christmas isn't a week-long celebration, is it? I suppose it is, but when you think about it, they've spread it out quite significantly longer than that because of like commercialism and buy lots of shit, please, and from like November or September even. Hate it. So it was a week-long celebration honouring Saturn, hence the name Saturnalia. He was a god of agriculture and time, and it was marked by feasting, role reversals, as I said, gift-giving, Christmas, and a general suspension of social norms. Now, that sounds fun.
It does.
It's like, is it like social norms? So does that mean that like it basically do what the fuck you want, like you don't like you wouldn't normally do? Or is that like be friendly to your enemies, or what is it, or like rich people hanging around with poor people? I really understand specifically what they mean by social norms, because I really
that was the bit that, yeah, I'm like, I like that that's one of the rules, because it's not a very specific rule.
Yeah, it's not really. It encapsulated the spirit of freedom and goodwill, offering a glimpse into the Romans' capacity for joy and revelry. Because a lot of people tend to think, like, especially like from the 60s, like in the 70s or whatever, I'm talking in the UK, you've got like programs like Up Pompeii with Frankie Howard, and they always seem to think like that Roman times was just full of like, you know, like orgies and everyone just banging each other, which does sound fun. And it was just one big party, unless you were a slave, but even then, like, slaves still got to take part in orgies, I guess, but maybe against her will, I don't know. The Romans believed that maintaining the gods' favour was essential for the well-being of the individual and the state. This belief was embodied in the practice of making offerings and performing rituals, seen as vital means of communication with the divine. Neglecting these duties could invite disaster, and it affected everything from personal health to military success. One enduring superstition which originated in ancient Rome, again, which I've covered this, like carrying the bride over the threshold, so I'm not going to really go into that. And so then it goes into like how Christianity grew into like and infiltrated the Roman Empire and the decline of paganism. I mean, I could go into, I was trying to find like articles that would tell you specifically how, like, what was lifted from Roman mythology into Roman Catholic rituals, but I don't know. I thought you would maybe know more than that, Mark.
Not really, no. Like, I mean, I didn't know about the Colidrius until I started looking at it the other day. Like, it's not
like
really
that. Have you got any other kind of weird?
I can tell you about some of the Pegasus.
Okay. Go on then.
Okay, so there's there's obviously quite a lot of them are just your standard, it's a big white horse with wings and it's magical.
Right.
They're just directly stealing the story, but there's the Pegasus of Segamo.
Segamo, right, okay.
Which is a big white flying horse, but it doesn't have wings, it's just a horse that flies. Like,
so it's just a horse.
Levitate on the wind.
Levitate on the wind. There's something sexier about a horse with wings, though, do you not think?
Yeah, I mean, just the horse in the sky doesn't seem quite as fancy.
No.
There's the Pegasus of Nancre.
The burlesque version of Pegasus with its wings and its feathers. Right, okay, sorry. I keep interrupting. Right, yeah, okay.
What happened? The Pegasus of Nancre is an exceptionally fast, large white horse that only has three legs. Two at the front, one at the back.
Why?
Don't know.
Diversity, I suppose, for the disabled.
There's the Pegasus of Kosges, which is a large white horse with no head, who descends from space.
What?
To carry off any foolhardy men on its back. The foolhardy men will never be seen again.
That is my favourite one so far. Just carries away these idiots.
There's the Pegasus of Raylance, which is another large white horse with no head.
Oh.
I greatly enjoy this one. So if you attempted to walk too close to a fairy entrance.
A fairy entrance.
As in a way to get into fairyland, not as in a fairy's arsehole.
Oh, okay.
It would gallop up behind you and knock you to the ground. But when you got up off the ground, you would be in a far off field or an entirely different part of the woods.
Okay. That's nice.
But are you and then off? There's the Pegasus of Govine, which is quite like the one that you like, but I feel less fun. So it was a large white horse that had the ability to breathe underwater. So it would stop and bow down for young girls who like horses to climb upon its back. And then would gallop into the nearest water and drown them.
Oh, because I was going to say, well, I think that's quite fun. I'd like to get on a horse's back. But yeah, the drowning part, not so much. That's a kelpie, is it not?
It is basically a kelpie.
Yeah.
The one of Cosgies as well. I'm like, well, at least that's just taking away foolhardy men. It's not drowning innocent women. Like.
Again, they always have their counterparts, don't they? So
yes.
They're opposites. I've got, like, see, there's a list of deities, and I only got as far as F when I did my little solo one, so I might as well just carry on with what I was doing. So there's genius, again, that's the word we use now, and that was the tutelary spirit or divinity of each individual, so not, like, I'm a fucking genius, I'm smarter than you, it was basically just your own divinity, that's all it meant. Grashy, that sounds like, you know, like gratuity.
Yeah.
So what do you think that means in Roman times?
The god of tipping?
No, the god. Well, I suppose in a way it's kind of like tipping, but it's a term, Roman term for charities or graces. Hercules, we've seen, but he became Roman. And there's a Roman statue of the infant Hercules strangling a snake. And that's not a euphemism. He is actually strangling a genuine snake, not his own penis, I should say. Strangling a snake. This one's fun. Hermaphroditus, which is an androgynous Greek god whose mythology was imported into Latin literature. Again, they stole it. Honos. What do you think that is? Or Onos? What does it sound like?
Honos or Onos?
Yeah.
Honesty?
Yes!
Yay!
Hora, not horrors. She was just the wife of Quirinus, the Romulus, or Romulus, I guess, or the god, the Etruscan god. Indiges, I can't pronounce his fucking thing. I don't even know what that means. Enter Sedona, one of the many minor goddesses of childbirth, invoked to keep evil spirits away from the child. And this is weird, symbolized by a cleaver. That's an interesting one as well that I read about, like another with Roman symbols. There was a two-headed axe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is represented, I think it was called a labia, or it represented lips, but not the lips of the face, the lips of the ladies down below.
Now, like that you were like, it represented labia. Well, what I mean is that it represented lips, but I don't mean that it represented lips of the face. Well, I mean, labia.
Maybe some people don't know what labia is, and labia again sounds like a Roman name, or it's probably a Latin word, I guess. And that was it wasn't meant for war, it was meant for like for I guess it represented the ladies, something that was quite like an axe seems like a weapon of war, but it was adapted by the LGBTQ community, apparently. I don't really know about that, but apparently it is. And their symbols. Then we've got Innes, the god. Oh, sorry, I said that Inter Sidonia was symbolized by a cleaver, which is strange. Like, why are they cleaving? Are they cleaving the evil spirits away, or are they cleaving the woman so that she can give birth easier? I don't know. That's my imagination, I suppose. Innes, Inws, god of fertility and sexual intercourse, and protector of livestock.
Lovely.
Invidia, goddess of envy and wrongdoing. Done them. Justitia, just titties, goddess of justice, just titties. Imagine, I'm going to get my just titties.
There's a drag queen called Selena S. Titties.
Is there?
Perhaps she based her entire act on this goddess.
I actually genuinely believed you there, that there was a drag queen called
There is a drag queen called Selena S. Titties.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I want to be just titties. Juturna, goddess of fountains, wells and springs, and Juventus, the goddess of the football team. No, she's the goddess of youth, but there is a football team called Juventus, so that's literally what it means, goddess of youth. Lares, they're just household gods. I guess they're like brownies. Latona, goddess of light. Not Kerry Katona. Latona. Laverna, not Lauren Laverna. Like, for anyone who doesn't know who I'm talking about, these are just like UK personalities or presenters. Laverna was the patroness of thieves, con men and charlatans. I like that they have their own gods. I like that. But Lemures, the malevolent dead. It's not even just an individual god or goddess. It's just that the malevolent dead are known as the Lemures. But what does that even mean, the malevolent dead? Is that just like grumpy ghosts with a grudge against you, or actual demons?
I don't know. Is it just like before just they angry. Came up with the word poltergeist?
Oh, it could be. Lavanna, goddess of the rite through which fathers accepted newborn babies as their own. That one made me laugh so much. She went on the Maury Povett show. Goddess of the Maury Povett show, when cucks accept that the kids aren't theirs but take it on as their own. Such a long-winded, it's just such a specific purpose. But I don't understand, does she mean that fathers accepted newborn babies as their own? Because why would they doubt that? I mean, it doesn't say that it's their own kids, or is it? That's confusing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just assumed it was if they weren't accepting their own kids, but maybe you pray to them to get them to accept your kids as their kids when they're not.
Did men always doubt that their babies weren't their own back then or something? Just so weird. Letum, personification of death. So that's just your Grim Reaper. Liber, a god of male fertility, viniculture, I don't know what that is, and freedom. Assimilated to Roman Bacchus in Greek Night. I guess that's where they get the word liberty from, and Libera is the female equivalent. There's loads of them. Liberatas, Liberatas, Libetina. But the Ribalaltias is goddess of personification of generosity. Libertas, goddess of personification of freedom. I guess the same thing. Libetina, goddess of death, corpses and funerals. Lua, goddess to whom soldiers sacrifice captured weapons. What? Now this one.
Okay, one of those amnesty boxes at the police station.
Yeah, this one really surprised me, Mark, right? Lucifer.
Oh.
God of the morning star.
Oh.
What the fuck? So, again, that's completely twisted by the Christianity version of Lucifer. I didn't realize he was originally a Roman god.
No, neither did I.
That's mad, isn't it? And he was a god of the morning star, so that sounds quite nice. But then the Christians turned him into Lucifer. What is that, angel of light or something? I guess it means the same thing, morning star. Or is he like, morning star is dawn, maybe, or just light in general, the light that comes from the sun during in the morning. I don't actually know what a morning star is. In terms of Roman mythology. Let's look into that later. So Lucina, goddess of childbirth, again, another one. Luna, goddess of the moon. We've got Lupercus, god of shepherds and wolves. His identity is obscure, but he's sometimes identified as the Greek god Pan. I suppose that would make sense if,
yes,
because Pan's kind of animal-like. Lympha.
Venus is the morning star.
Is she? Oh my god. So is he the male equivalent?
He's the male equivalent of Venus.
Of Venus? That's mad. So you can hail, you can worship Lucifer all you want, because he was actually all right. He was actually a god of love.
It's because Venus can be seen shining brightly in the east just before the sun rises. So
he's
the morning star, because he's the male equivalent of Venus, and Venus is the morning star.
And Venus is one of the brightest planets in the sky when you look at it. So maybe, yeah, I get that. Mana Genita, goddess of infant mortality.
Oh.
Why would you even need that?
Sad thing.
Yeah. It's sad that they need a god of infant mortality. Manas, the souls of the dead who came to be seen as household deities. So just ghosts, basically. Mania, or Mania. Now, does that where, you know, like Beatlemania and whatever mania comes from? But it's the consort of the Etruscan underworld god Mantis. That's really male. And perhaps be identified with the Mater Larum, not to be confused with... Oh, wait, okay, I don't understand any of that. Mantis is an Etruscan god of the dead and ruler of the underworld. I guess maybe he evolved into Pluto then. I'm just going to skip some of these. Mephitis, that sounds like your cat's name, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah, it does.
Mephitis or Mephitis, well, it's the same thing, it's just different spelling. Goddess and personification of poisonous gases and volcanic vapors.
Okay.
Just makes me think of farting. Just noxious smells. Milona. Oh, yeah, like Mephitis, I guess then if she's a goddess of volcanic vapors, then people of Pompeii obviously didn't worship her enough because she basically killed them all.
But going back to what you said earlier, does it not actually just mean that she was shite at her job?
Yeah, she was shite at her job. Milona or Milonia, not Trump's wife. Goddess of bees and beekeeping. Mina. I know a woman called Mina, and she is of Italian origin. She's a goddess of fertility and menstruation. Like, they've got a goddess for periods. Mercury, we know, is the messenger of the gods, blah blah blah, we've gone over that. Mithras, when Mithras was popular with soldiers. Molly, daughters of Mars, possibly goddesses of grinding of the grain. Moneta, minor goddess of memory, equivalent to the Greek Mnemosyne. Also used as an epithet of Juno. Morta, she's a minor goddess of death and one of the Parcae. I've heard of her. The cutter of the thread of life. So she cuts, when you die, she cuts your thread and then that's you done.
Yes.
Murcia or Murtia, a little known goddess who was associated with the myrtle and in other sources was called a goddess of sloth and laziness. She's my divine goddess, I think. Because I'm incredibly lazy of late. I just like to just doss about. So Murcia is my definitely one of the gods that I would worship. Both interpretations arising, or she could have influence over me and I don't worship her, but she's influenced me to be lazy. Anyway, she was also later equated with Venus.
She doesn't influence you to be lazy though. Again, she's doing a bad job. So
Matunus. Matunus Tutunus. Guess what he does?
Matunus Tutunus.
Yeah.
Does he tattoo you with cartoons that you like?
No, he's literally a dick. Just a dick. Oh. A phallic god. So he's a giant penis. That's all he does. He just dicks around. Nania, goddess of funerary lament. So if you're crying at a funeral, she's the one there. Nascio, personification. Again, another birth one. Personification of the act of birth. Necessitas, goddess of destiny, the Roman equivalent of Ananke, but I don't know who Ananke is, unless it's Greek. Nemesis.
The name of Anki.
Nemesis is a raid in Alton Towers.
Yep.
Neptune. We've mentioned him. Nerio is an ancient war goddess and a personification of valor. She is the consort of Mars, who Mars cheats on with Venus. What a dick. Or I should say, what a Matunus to Tunis. If you want to call someone a dickhead.
Ananke is the Greek primordial feminine power that was the dictator of all fate.
All right, so that's why she's the goddess of destiny in Roman time. Right, okay. Neverita, presumed a goddess and associated with Deconsis and Neptune in the Etrusco-Roman zodiac of Marcianus Capella, but otherwise unknown. That's a shame. There are some gods in here that are just unknown, which I find sad because it's like, you know, when a god becomes unknown, they lose all their power and that's it. They're dead again. I'd like to know more about them, but they're forgotten. So there's Nixie, goddesses of childbirth. So many of them. Nona, minor goddess, the spinner of the thread of life.
No.
She's the spinner of the thread of life, and her Greek equivalent was Clotho. So she is basically, she's the one that keeps you alive, I guess, and then the other one cuts your thread when it's your time to go. She is the one that is spinning your fate. And there's also Nortia, who is the Etruscan goddess of fate, destiny, and we're a nail. Oh, right. So enchants. So fate, destiny, and chance, another version of that. From the city of Volsinae, where a nail was driven into a wall of her temple as part of a New Year ceremony. I think we should do that for New Year and do that a new tradition. Just drive a nail into a wall. Nox is the goddess of night, derived from the Greek Nyx. Ops or Opis, goddess of resources or plenty. Orcus, a god of the underworld. And Punisher, broken oaths. So if you break an oath or a promise, Orcus is going to come for you.
Fair play.
We get to P. So Palutua is an obscure goddess who guarded the Palatine Hill. She was assigned a flaming miner. That sounds funny. Sounds like she's fucking child. Yes, a flaming miner. Pales or Pales, deity of shepherds, flocks, and livestock. Panda. it doesn't even explain who Panda is. It says CM Panda, right? Well, I better see what M Panda is. Mpanda or Panda was a goddess, and she was a goddess of rustics. Well, again, it's just so obscure. Like, I don't actually know what her point, like, the purpose of her is. I find it funny that she's just called Panda, so we'll just leave it at that.
Just assume she's a very large panda.
She's a very large bear that eats bamboo and isn't very dangerous and cute. And where are we? We were at Panda, weren't we? I'm so confused. Right. Then we get to Parse, the Three Fates, right? We've mentioned them. Pax, goddess of peace. Penantes or Depenates, household gods. There's quite a few of them. Pycomus. That just reminds me of that. That makes me laugh all the time. Have you seen that picture or meme where it's a kid and he's drawn or she's drawn there? Buzz Lightyear. And he says, "Hi, I'm Buzz Lightyear. I come in pie."
Yes,
if child drew that and you've never seen that before, but he showed you that. That's the best thing ever. I come in pies. Anyway, Pycomus is a minor god of fertility. I suppose that makes sense. Agriculture, matrimony, infants, and children. Because children write about people coming in pies. Picus, italic woodpecker god. What? An italic woodpecker god with oracular powers. What's that mean? It can just talk. It's basically Woody Woodpecker. Paillettes. Now that sounds to me like a Catholic thing, paella, but or maybe like the paella, isn't that like when Michelangelo did a statue, he made a statue of Jesus being cradled, like he was dead but being cradled by the Virgin Mary's mother, and it was called the paella. But maybe I'm just clutching at straws here, I don't know. Paetas is a goddess of duty, personification of the Roman virtue. Pilumus is a minor guardian god concerned with the protection, again, at infants at birth. Pluto, we've come across, he was a name for the ruler of the dead, popularised through the mystery religions and also the dog of Mickey Mouse.
Mostly made popular by the dog.
Again, like, Mickey Mouse has Pluto as a dog, but how do you think Goofy feels about that? Because he's a dog. And he's seeing another dog be enslaved by basically his pal, Mickey.
Yeah, like, are there two types of dogs in their reality? Or are they, like, in the same way that they're...
Why is one, like, a proper dog?
Like, we and chimps share a common ancestor. Do, like, Pluto-type dogs and Goofy-type dogs share a common ancestor?
Yeah, but wouldn't that piss Goofy off, seeing, like, his common ancestor being... treated like that, basically? I don't know, maybe he doesn't give a shit. Like, wouldn't it be weird if Goofy had a pet dog? Or is that like just us having a pet chimp? Is that what you think?
Like,
you're trying to say, why are we talking about this? Like, it's a real thing anyway.
I feel somebody needs to resurrect Walt Disney so we can ask some serious questions.
We need answers from him. We're Pilumus. I've done that one right. Pomona, she's goddess of fruit trees or fruits, gardens and orchids, assigned the Flamen Minor, a little homosexual child. Pomona, goddess of the future, also called Antivorta. Portunus, god of keys. I need that. The god of keys has failed me so many fucking times.
Same.
The amount of times I've come home and I don't have my keys on me and I'm locked out the house. God damn you, Portunus. He's the god of keys, doors and livestock, and again he was also assigned a Flamen Minor. Postverta, goddess of childbirth and the past. Priapus, right, we've heard of him. I don't know if you have. I'm assuming you have.
I feel like I have, but I don't know why.
Well, it's a medicinal term. It's a medical term. If you've got priapus or if you're priaptic, like, say you take it's when a man has a boner but he can't get it down.
Yes.
Because Priapus was a phallic guardian of gardens. And he was a god that had a permanent massive hard-on, basically, that would never go down. But yet he wasn't a sex god, he was just a guardian. Gardens? Why? I don't understand. Unless it's a fertility symbol or something.
Maybe, or, you know, just because he has a massive erection doesn't mean that he can't care about gardens.
Yeah, I suppose. Providentia, goddess of forethought. Pudicia, goddess of personification of chastity, one of the Roman virtues. This is so hard to pronounce. Quercutalani, nymphs of the oak. So just like silly girls trip that, yeah, bimbos that hang around trees. We spoke about Carinus. Caritis is goddess of motherhood. And she was originally a Sabin or pre-Roman, and she was later equated with Juno. So again, Aquinas is female equivalent. R. Robigo or Robigus. Robigus Dicus. A god or goddess who personified grain disease and protected crops. Roma is a personification of the Roman state, as we know. Romina, goddess who protected breastfeeding mothers. S. Salacia, goddess of seawater and the wife of Neptune. Salus, goddess of public welfare of the Roman people.
She's an important job.
Well, I mean, she's like I guess, the personification of housing benefits or the job centre. I don't know. Public welfare. What does that mean exactly? The public welfare of the Roman people. Mark, help me out here.
Public welfare of the Roman. Yeah, like just
making sure the general Roman people are sound and looked
after.
Yeah,
like everything's fine in your community, I guess.
Okay. Then there's Sancus, god of loyalty, honesty, and oaths. Scotus. That surprised me. Because Scotus to me was like, I thought Scotus, or that Scotia, was supposed to be like an ancient Egyptian princess who founded the Kingdom of Scotland. It's a weird myth, but anyway, there's Scotus. God of darkness. That's true. Scotland is quite dark. Fair enough. And that's why we drink. Brother of Terra, lover of Nox, and opposite Dice. She is the goddess of deep shadows and one of the primordial deities. Yeah, it does describe Scotland quite well. Securitas. Isn't that a company? I'm not kidding. That's one of the gods. Securitas. Don't they like move money between banks over here?
They do.
She is a goddess of security. Oh, well, that makes sense because she's a goddess of security. Especially the security of the Roman Empire. Now she's just the security of bankers and wankers. Sylvanus, god of woodlands and the forests.
I was going to say goddess of Sylvanian families.
They yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. They're woodland creatures. Sol, or Sol Invictus, is just the sun god. Somnus, god of sleep. Soranus, a Soranus. Soranus, a god later subsumed by Apollo. He's an underworld god. Yeah. Sors, or Sors, is the god of luck. Spes is the goddess of hope. Stata Mater is a goddess who protected against fires, sometimes equated with Vesta. Sterquilinus, manure, god of shit. God of fertilizer. Sedela, goddess of persuasion. Sumenus, goddess of nocturnal thunder. Sulis Minerva, a conflation of this Celtic goddess Sul and Minerva. Right, I'm nearly at the end of this. I promise this will end soon. Sorry. Number, right, we've got T. So this is just to explain like how many different gods they've got. It's mad. But then when you think of the Hindu religion, how they've got thousands and millions of gods, don't they? But it's all part of the one.
Yes.
But not so in Roman mythology. They just nick all the other gods or just make them up as they go along. So Talasius is the god of marriage. Telumo or Tellurus is a male counterpart of Tellus. Tempestus, a goddess of storms and sudden weather, which makes sense to me because like there's the tempest, a tempest as a storm.
Yeah.
Shakespeare and stuff like that. Or temper, maybe that's where the word temper comes from. I'm pretty sure it is. Terra Mater or Tellus, goddess of the earth and land. The Greek equivalent is Gaia, mother of Titans, consort of Calus Uranus. Terminus, where the bus stops. It's the rustic god of boundaries. So yeah, Tiberinus, river god and deity of the Tiber River. It's a bit like how the Ganges, like rivers always have their equivalent gods, I suppose.
Yeah.
Tibertus, god of the river Anio, a tributary of the Tiber. Tranquilitas, well that's pretty obvious. It's not tranquilizers.
Like peacefulness, calmness.
Peace and tranquility. And again, we've mentioned this before. Trivia, she's the goddess of crossroads and magic and equated with Hecate, the goddess of witch. She's a witch, I suppose. And then we get to V, which is the final letter, and there's no Z gods in Roman mythology, or W by the looks of it, or an X. There's no X's. So V, Vicuna, is the ancient Saban goddess of rest after harvest, who protected farmers' sheep, later identified with Nike and worshipped as a war goddess. Vagitanus. so immature. Vagitanus is a type of Vagisil, I suppose. No, it opens a newborn's mouth for its first cry. So when a baby first cries, it's vagitanus that's doing it. For its okay. doing it. Videovis or Veovis is another obscure god, a sort of anti-Jupiter, as the meaning of the name suggests. It may be a god of the underworld, so just someone who winds up Jupiter. Vanilla or Vanilia is, again, the wife of Neptune or Faunus. Venti are the winds. Venti sounds like a...
Is it not a coffee measurement?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like coffee, isn't it, venti? Is that small coffee? What is a venti?
I don't know what size it is, but it is a...
Yeah. Or is it Costa? Is it Costa or Starbucks that do that? I think it's Costa, maybe. Fuck, I don't know. The winds, the equivalent to the Greek anemoi, north wind, is Aquilo. Septentrio is the Greek Boreas. South wind is Auster. East wind is Volturnus. And the west wind is Favonius. Northwest wind, Charis or Chorus. Venus, we've covered. She's a goddess of love, beauty, sexuality, and gardens, and mother of founding hero Aeneas. That's the guy I was talking about who, like, came from Sparta. Troy. It was Troy, wasn't it? Yeah, he was a Trojan. Yes. Yeah, and he was the one that founded Rome, not Romulus and Remus or whatever. So there's two different conflicting stories there. This is a weird one, right? Verminus, god of cattle worms.
That is a weird one.
I mean, I get the word vermin, right? And maybe that's where the word comes from, vermin, like as in things that crawl about or you don't want them. So is Verminus the god of the cattle worms himself, or is it the god to prevent cattle worms? I really don't know what his purpose is. What do you
think? I'm going to assume that he's the god of the cattle worms because
in the cattle worms worship. That's what I was trying to think of. Vertumnus is the god of the seasons and gardens and fruit trees. Vesta, goddess of the hearth, the Roman state and the sacred fire. Vica Pota, goddess of victory and competitions. You'd think she would be like roommates with Trivia.
Yeah.
Because she's like quizzes.
But then Vita Pota sounds like she's... like very sporty, and Trivia sounds like she'd like to hang out with us, so maybe not. Yeah.
Victoria is goddess of victory. Vidus is a god who separated the soul and body after death. That's his one job. Verbius is a forest god. Virtues, a god or goddess of military strength, personification of the Roman virtue or virtues. Volturnus is the god of water, he was also assigned to Flamen Minor, and not to be confused with Volturnus. This same thing, and really, oh no, Volturnus is spelled V-O-L, and Volturnus is spelled V-U-L. Don't know what the difference is. Voluptuous.
Good name.
She's the goddess of pleasure, of course. That's my kind of goddess. I worship voluptuous women. Vulcan, as we know, is the god of the forge, fire and blacksmith, and he's the husband to Venus, who's cheating on him with Mars, and one of the deconsenters, and was also assigned a Flamen Minor. There you go, that's them all. Okay. That's your lot. If you listen, so if you want to hear the first part of the, you know, the A to V, I would say, of Roman deities, you'd have to go back to the previous episode and listen to that. Okay, this has gone on quite a long time, but I don't know. If you get anything else, sorry, I feel like I just took over there.
I was just going to slag off Pliny the Elder.
Okay, go on. Yeah, let's slag him off.
Well, I was saying to you before we recorded that obviously we talk about Pliny the Elder quite a lot, and I'm always like, I wonder what this wild thing is that he found. But then, because he is Roman, I looked into him slightly more and I realised he's just crazy. So I picked three of the...
So craziest things Pliny the Elder has done.
Pliny the Elder was... I mean, the thing is, though, if you Google him... Did I take a photo of this?
You can't take a photo of an ancient Roman guy. What?
No, sorry. I took a wee... Anywhere you Google him, it seems like he's not a crazy person. Like, it's all about how he was an author, a naturalist, one of the first natural philosophers, a famous commander in the Roman Empire, blah, 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 blah. He's famous for starting the idea of keeping a natural history encyclopedia, and people started making encyclopedias after he did. So there's no mention anywhere of him being completely batshit mad. And obviously the stuff we talked about before, every time he's come up, we're like, listen to this crazy idea.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I looked through the stuff that's in his encyclopedia and I'm like, he literally just made everything up. So examples.
Okay, please do.
Abarimon. So he said that when he visited India, there was...
Wait, remember I said, did the Romans visit India?
Oh, yeah.
Why didn't you say that?
That didn't occur to me.
Okay. So
I mean, he might not have been to India, though. He's mental.
Yeah, he's mental, so he claims. Right, okay.
He said when he visited India, there was a group of people there, or a tribe of people there, who were all born with their feet on back to front.
Okay, yeah, he's never been to... Well, I suppose you do get, like, mutilated, like, kind of mutants that are born.
He responds to that already, Leslie. He said, it's important to know that this was not a disability because actually these people ran everywhere with a terrifying disjointed gait but an extraordinarily fast speed. The people of India said of the Abarimon that you should stay away from them because they were extremely vicious but also sadly impossible to catch. They couldn't bring an example of one back with them.
Oh, funny that. Because it didn't happen.
Achlis. So when he visited an area of North Africa that not many other Romans had been to, he came back and told tale of the Achlis, which he recorded in his book. Sure. He said Achlis are huge elk-like creatures that roam the plains of Northern Africa. They have an upper lip so large that it makes it difficult for them to move around. But fortunately, they're intelligent animals who walk backwards everywhere, and that stops them tripping over their own lips.
I'm sorry, why is he obsessed with, like, backward shit? India, they had backwards feet, and now we've got a backwards walking thing. I mean, I was going
maybe
to say,
every time
like,
he came back, people were like, oh, tell us one of your stories, please. And he was like, so where we went, there was a creature which, well, the backwards thing about it was its nose, which was on the back of its head. And nobody thought he was talking shit. Even again, apparently now, don't understand. I only noted down three of them. They were all equally mental.
Okay.
So when he visited Central Africa, he came back with tales of the Krakota, which apparently everyone there talks about, although there's no other recordings of it outside of him. Well, then I'm going to send this to you as well.
Okay. I was going to say, like, when you mentioned, like, the large lips, I was like, well, fair enough, there are women in Africa that do have those big lip plates, but then I realised you were saying he wasn't talking about a human.
No, he was talking about an animal that was the size bigger than and looked quite like an elk.
Is that
the first picture's S titties, by the way?
Yeah, I was gonna say, who's that? Is that S titties?
Yes.
Oh, what the fuck is this? I can't read the writing.
So this is a Krakota, apparently. So they're North African. They're well known in North Africa as the offspring of a lioness which has a child without a lion.
What?
Yep.
Hence,
so would you like to describe what a baby lion cub looks like, Leslie, if a lion isn't involved?
It looks like it's got the feet of a goat, like the legs of a goat, because it's got cloven hooves. It's got a really goofy head that looks a bit like a crocodile with goofy eyes. And it has a lion's mane and what is that on its tail? A really long tail. I can only describe as maybe a lion's tail, I suppose. It has got a fish head on the end of it.
An unnecessarily long lion's tail and like a very lackluster lion's mane.
Yeah, but this head is the funniest part of it.
So apparently people throughout Central Africa are terrified of Krakota because they it can mimic the voice of a man, the sounds of cattle or the barks of a dog, and it is the enemy of all three.
Okay. But you didn't bring back any evidence of this?
No, or of any of the other things that he ever saw, all of which were batshit mad. But again, highly regarded as one of Rome's most important naturalists.
It would be a good time to be a liar back then, because like, what are they going to do? Like, it's not like they could say, oh, actually I was there and I looked it up online or whatever. Like, nowadays it's easy to debunk things like that. again, throw back to like the Kate Middleton thing, because like the British press just, you know, like launched this, like published this photograph because they're such arse-lickers for the monarchy, and go, oh look, she's fine, look at her with her kids, there's nothing photoshopped about this. And then the rest of the media, like outside the UK, were like, no, kill this, it's clearly photoshopped, it's been tampered with, get rid of it, they can't be trusted. So it's not like in Roman times you could say, actually, Pliny, you're talking shite, because I know for a fact that there's no such thing as that over there, because I looked it up. There's evidence. Because you wouldn't know. You would just take his word for it, wouldn't you?
I mean, I suppose you wouldn't really have any choice.
Is he the one that said that Atlantis existed? I'm sure he
was. Yeah, I think he might have been.
Yeah, and he said, oh, there's such a place as Atlantis, and they were much more advanced, and... Yeah, he started that whole bullshit.
And they all had backwards ears.
Yeah. And their arms were back to front. Their tits were on their back. Oh, well. Is that it then?
I believe it is.
Should we do next week the second part of our elementals?
Why the fuck not?
Why the fuck? No, let's do it. So we covered earth and air, so the next one is water and fire, is that right?
Yeah,
are you sure? I can't remember.
Where are they? Elementals.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, fire and water we've got to do.
Which one do you want to do? Like, let's toss a coin if you've got a coin handy. I mean, you could just be like Pliny the Elder and pretend you
do. I do have a coin handy.
Right, you genuinely do. Okay.
I do, yeah.
Right, well, let's toss for it. So okay. Heads, we'll say heads, I'll go water.
And tails, I'll be water.
Okay, go.
Okay. Oh, that went way further than I expected it to. It's tails.
So you're water.
And you're fire. And I'm
fire. That's kind of how I was hoping it would go.
So me that's too. Good.
Yay! All right, folks, well, that's enough of the Roman mythology. I mean, if you want to look into it, there's plenty of books on the matter, or you can watch Rome. I don't know whether that's accurate. Probably isn't. Or go watch the 1980s film Caligula. I've heard it's right. Laugh. It was made by a porn penthouse or something. That was he basically turned it into a big porno movie. He ruined it. I remember watching it as a child. I mean, that's so inappropriate, isn't it, that I watched that film as a kid, but I had no idea that it was going to turn into that. I thought it was just about Caligula. In fact, I had no idea who Caligula was, to be fair. I guess when I was a kid, I watched a lot of weird shit late at night that my parents had no idea I was watching. Did you do that?
No, I don't think I did.
Inappropriate movies as a child? No?
No.
Oh god, that says a lot about my upbringing. Nothing that scarred you?
No, I think like my mum has insane super hearing, so if I put the TV on in my bedroom when I was a child after bedtime, she would have known immediately, even if she was watching TV.
Oh.
Which I thought was odd when I was younger compared to other people's parents, but I now realise I can do that as well, so...
Oh, so that's like your family superpower, is it?
Yeah, well, not that, just my mum's side of the family. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's not really a superpower, though. I realise it's why my mum has migraines all the time. It's like I'm so sensitive to sound that there being an additional sound somewhere else, even if it's very quiet, I'm like, there's more sound in the house.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm quite deaf, so I don't hear a lot of things that I should maybe that's the good thing, but it can be good and bad, because if there's weird sounds going on, then I'm not really that scared, but then people can easily sneak up on me because I can't hear them, so that's a bad thing, because David does that to me all the fucking time. He's really good at sneaking up, like, or walking into a room and I don't know, and I turn around, he's suddenly there, and I'm like, shit.
This makes sense as well, because it's never really occurred to me before, but you know, like, not just in movies, but also in real life, when you see somebody, like, sneak up behind someone else, and they turn around and scream, I always think, what a fucking dramatic bitch, because...
That's me? call me a dramatic.
Because realistically, I don't turn around and be like, what are you doing? Only if it's a small child. And I'm like, that small child sneaking up on me. Oh, I'm scared. If any adult tries to do that, I'm like, why are you in my personal space? Like, what's going on?
Have you seen that? There's a video that was going around of this blonde woman. She opens the door to like a postman or delivery man or something, and she screams, right, because the guy's black, and he goes
what's expecting you to say that?
No, but this what he says, right, he goes, no ma'am, don't worry, I'm not OJ. And then she starts laughing, and they both have a good old laugh about it, and she's like, oh, you made my day, and then goes back inside. For those of you who don't know who OJ is, he's referring to OJ Simpson, who murdered his blonde wife. I mean, he was not convicted. He was found innocent in court of doing it, but we all know he did it. Come on.
I believe he was found rich in American court.
Yeah. I just find it's funny that, like, back then, it was basically the race card that was pulled out. So all the black people, I think because they were pissed off about Rodney King. So even though they knew that OJ killed her, they still wanted him in a fucked up way to get away with it out of revenge or something, like, for black rights. Yeah, and I'm just like, I know.
Rich. I don't think,
yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. Like, they were all like, oh no, this is for black people and stuff. This is for, like, yeah. But then that guy, like, in that video is like acknowledging that, you know, OJ is a murderer and he's black. So anyway, that wouldn't happen over here though.
No, I do find that bizarre with, like, American court systems, that it's like, if you're rich enough, you don't have to go to jail.
Yeah, like Donald Trump. I don't think,
like, Donald Trump. Yeah, the fact that Donald Trump is going to probably run to be president again,
yeah,
and has been found guilty of being a rapist, but isn't a convicted rapist because he paid not to go to jail for the rape that he committed.
Well, I mean, he did the same thing when he was supposed to be drafted for Vietnam, or supposed to go to Vietnam. He probably paid a doctor to say he had bone spurs so he didn't have to go. So as you see, if you're rich enough, you can get away with anything, really.
True.
Like, I mean, look what happened. Like, there was a conspiracy theory here, but, like, again, what would happen if Prince William did commit a crime there? They'd just cover it up.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, come on. I mean, think of the atrocities that royal families have done and just covered it up. Like, and we'll just, you know, oh, it's fine. Like, we'll just slap that shit up.
I mean, to be fair, I realise to any American listeners that I'm like, that's insane in America, forgetting that we literally have a prince of our country that is a child sex offender that doesn't have to go to jail because he's a prince.
And he was fucking delighted when, you know, Charles couldn't come, like, attend this ceremony, I think. I think it was, like, the memorial of King Constantine of Greece, like I mentioned earlier. So Prince William didn't go yet. King Charles didn't go yet. Camilla was on holiday. So it was up to Prince Andrew got to lead the rest of the minor royals into the ceremony. And he was fucking gloating. You should have seen the smile on his face. Like, yes. Look at me, I'm in charge, the king of the nonces. Got away with it. It's absolutely shocking, and no one talks about it anymore. Like, I thought he wasn't supposed to do anything like royal duties or whatever. He was supposed to be, like, put away at the side, which again is another stupid thing that the royal family just try and sweep everything under the carpet.
Yes.
Do you know what, I'm happy for Harry and Meghan. I mean, he did the right thing getting away from that lot. Fucking hell. Anyway, let's leave it at that. So next week we're going to do the Elementals. This has been a long podcast, but I feel like it should be because we haven't been, like, uploading properly for a while, so it'll be extra long to make up for it. It's up to you if you want to listen to the whole thing, or, you know, in parts, or not bother at all. Whatever.
I like the idea that someone would get to this bit in the podcast and be like, Charlie, up to you. You don't want to listen to any of the podcast this week. Just cut it off right now before we say bye.